want to say thank you to Preston, dear friend. We go back a long ways, back to my younger days at Davies Memorial when I was first starting my ministry. I've been in Annapolis for 8 years now. This is my eighth year. Time goes so fast. I just saw Lily, and she's such a big girl now. She was just this tall last time I saw her. Just amazing how time flies. You know, the first service I got off of my script pretty much, and I'll probably do it again. So for the choir, and we do two services in Annapolis, it's great for you because you get to hear two different sermons. For you, you may think it's original, but it's actually may even get a little bit better. I was looking at the order of service before I came up, and my message today is about choice, choosing. And if you open your order of service and look at a lot of the things that we have talked about this morning, right? The hymn, Building a New Way, Come and Go With Me to That Land, Love Your Enemies, Do Good to Those who Hate You, May the Light of Our Place Warm Your Heart and Guide You to the Ways of Truth. As we gather here to worship, pledging ourselves to the endless search for truth, to the right of each to believe as mind, heart, and conscience dictate. And then, Song of Exhortation, since what we choose is what we are, and what we love, we yet shall be, the goal may ever shine afar. The will to reach it makes us free. Choice, 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 all in your order of service. Well, because you create by your choices. You create their boundless realities with each choice. And some choices lead us to better places than other choices. For example, you know, when we talk about poverty in America, the reason we have it is because not enough of us have chosen to eliminate it. Now, some people say, that doesn't make sense to me. Well, first of all, for me, I subscribe to the notion that human beings do exactly what they want to do in life. Period. That makes it hard for some of us because we would like to blame somebody else for the problems in the world. But actually, I start with myself. And when I'm on the street and there's a guy begging for food or looking for a handout, I have my own little thing. I say, hey, if the person asks and I have, I will give. Now, there is no right or wrong in this scenario. It's, again, one of those many realities in our choosing. A great gift from the creative sustaining force, the ability of free will, the ability to choose. It's a beautiful thing. And we can choose chaos or community. I choose in that particular moment to give whatever I have or to buy him or her a sandwich. I'll never forget when I was in Chicago, I'm an affiliate on the affiliate faculty at Meadville Lumber, and I was walking the street. And this guy came up to me and said, you got any cash, any spare change? I said, man, I just gave my last, few dollars to a guy just before you, man, I'm sorry. He said, well, there's an ATM machine right inside here. This brother's advanced. I went to the ATM machine. I don't always do that. Likewise, I was just in Baltimore for the Professionals of Color retreat, and I was walking the street, and an older homeless black woman came to me. She said, hey, I'm hungry. I need some food. I looked around, and there was a sandwich shop right there. I said, all right, let's go get a sandwich. I don't have any cash on me. She said, never mind. You know, say what you want, but my opinion is the homeless people are not there to get on our nerves or to be a pest or because they are destitute or whatever we want to say. I believe they are there to actually remind us of the unfinished business of this American dream. They are, in fact, a gift. So I don't see a homeless person and look past them. I want to see them. I want to see the dinginess. I want to see the ugliness. I want to see the love. Because a part of myself is right there. And a part of the unfinished business of America is right there. So I don't want to not see it. What too many of us do. We don't go through the city. We go around the beltway, metaphorically speaking. We don't want to see the pain. But the only way you can fix the pain, just like the Buddha, right? The only way you can fix the pain is you got to go in to the struggle and see it and feel it and experience it. The only way to get to nirvana is you got to have some pain. Now, I know that. You know, when Preston knew me, I was, you know, thinking I could change the world, and then my personal world, you know, had a breakup in the church. College sweetheart. Devastating. Lowest point of my life. But absolutely, I can tell you today that it has fundamentally made me a better man, a better person, a great minister. Right now. But it was a low point. And you're at a low point. You know, Trump administration, what happened in your church with two of your ministers that I know both of them and love both of them. I know of your story. A story is something else. A narrative is something else, because a narrative has many, many angles. And you could follow one bit of the story to one place and there's one story there. You could follow it another place and there's a story there. There's so many stories. Only thing we can do is let go and love and just say, this is just an is. Because in the process of life, and a homeless person can tell you this, a person who struggled can tell you this, a person who's been low can tell you this. In the process of life, there is creation. As Hinduism puts it, there's the God of creation, there's the God of love and preservation, and there's the God of destruction. That is the cycle of life, my friends. And so, as a minister, as people of faith, we come to this place to learn and experience all that life is, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So when we run away, and in fact, we're running away from our own lessons. When we run away, when we look away from the impoverished person, we look away from our own lessons. And now the universe is interesting because sometimes it will force you, right? It'll give you a little light thump, pay attention, and then it'll give you a pay attention. And then it'll say, pay attention! And that's when we really have a dark journey of the soul. And so wisdom is really to remind us that when something has happened, when we're in a transition, when bad things come, that we need to pay attention and know that it's an opportunity for growth and change. It really is. You know, bad things are happening in our country right now. And I want so badly to do like this. I do. I want to say, idiot. Stupid. I got a lot of bad words I can say. But I know those other three fingers are pointing right back at me as I point outward. Now, I'm not saying we can't speak out against incredibly bad legislation and ideas. We should do that. But we got to remember when we're talking about an individual and a human being, they're operating from their own experience. And sometimes that experience can be very much ignorant from ignorance and be very clouded. But I've come to believe that as a country, this is a lesson for all of us. As we point our finger outward and it points back to us, and what it is saying is that we're complicit in the creation of this. We were complicit in the creation of the first black president in this country to show indeed the light, the greatness within us. But indeed, we are complicit also in the creation of this, perhaps this darkness within us, this shadow within us. It's a beautiful thing that the black man is now considered the light. It feels like some cosmic game taking place. The black man, corruption free. The white guy, who represents, of course, the epitome of privilege. You know what privilege looks like. You know it. You can see it. You can smell it. It looks like Preston. Come on up here, Preston. Privilege. I love you, Preston. You know that. But privilege is tall and handsome. You're handsome, Preston.
Thank you.
Privilege is straight. Privilege is Protestant. Privilege is Christian. Privilege is educated. You are in the circle. If I had to throw a dot and I wanted to hit privilege, I just need to throw the dot at you. And so when people talk about the system and they get angry at the system, they're really getting angry at Preston. I'm sorry, Preston. What he represents. And Preston says, don't forget about his wife, Lori. And I said, yes, you are the cleavers. You can sit down, Preston. The cleavers, right? This image that we get from England, from the aristocracy. I was just watching this whole Princess Diana thing with my wife over the weekend. Man, I remember my mom waking me up 3 o'clock in the morning to watch the wedding. You remember that? This was big stuff. This is the dream. The dream of what we consider to be perfection, what we all aspire to. We want our little kids and our sons and daughters to aspire to, even though they probably could never become a king or a queen, but that's what they aspire to, that perfection. Now, ultimately, what I have been trying to say as a Unitarian Universalist is that we're trying to expand the dartboard, expand the circle of privilege, so that more people can be accepted. Because every time you're not what we described here, you have to take a step back. If you're short or overweight, you should have said you're in good shape, you're relatively healthy. If you're overweight or if you're black or if you're gay or name an opposite, and you move further and further away from the center of privilege. Fundamentally, those at the center of the privilege feel uncomfortable when they feel the board expanding. Because in a way, there's an idea that if we share more, I get less. And it's true. You do. It's true. You do get less. So our work has been fundamentally to expand the circle of privilege. When we teach about forgiveness and judging less and looking at the namaste in others, we're talking about expanding the circle of privilege. Ending poverty is about expanding the circle of privilege to see myself in the other. But what we also got from this aristocracy is our idea of what is holy, righteous, and good. You know, they've proven, if you go look at the studies, that if those that on the higher echelons of society can see themselves in those at the lower echelons of society, you have the income gap is much less. So, for example, if you look at homogeneous countries, Sweden, Finland, Japan, the richest of the rich, the gap between the riches of the rich and the poor of the poor is not as great. Because fundamentally, that Japanese man or woman can see himself in the poorest Japanese. There's no diversity. Now, America is a heterogeneous country, and the riches of the rich have a certain look and culture and style. And most Fortune 500 companies, most of the wealth that is transferred by this group of people. Now, I'm not saying they do it on purpose. I'm just saying they may not be cognizant of this, but this is an is. Well, the gap between the haves and have-nots is greater, much greater in America than these homogeneous countries, because the people at the top cannot see themselves in that little brown Mexican and that little black boy in Chicago. That's a hard reality. But here's what I want to tell you this morning. We can eliminate any and all problems that exist in our country. Poverty, miseducation, name it. When the government says they don't have enough money for something, I laugh every time. When you can raise billions of dollars for a political campaign and then say there's not enough money to refurbish neighborhoods, then priorities. Martin Luther King said we have to move from a thing-oriented society to a people-oriented society. It's just we don't want to do it. Smallpox was a huge problem in this nation. In the old world, it was wiping out Europeans left and right, whole families torn apart by this dreaded disease. And finally, people got together and they said, we got to figure this out. And they put money and resources and scientists and chemists and they start working it out. And all of a sudden, they got a cure, a vaccination, a vaccine for smallpox. And they said, we can't just vaccinate those in Europe. We got to go to Africa. We got to go to the most remote places on the continent, on the globe, because we can't even leave any of it left because it might, you know, come back. And they eliminated smallpox from the... Anybody in here had smallpox? I'm just checking. Now, it does exist in some, like I said, remote places. But that was a priority. Right? When we stood up for LGBTQ rights, that was a priority, and now marriage is legal in the state of Maryland. I'm trying to say to you that you know, when John Lewis and Martin Luther King and all those folk marched and said, we want our rights, it took some blood, sweat, and tears, but it happened. It's about choosing. It's about not being afraid. It's about taking some risks. So we have the world we have because not enough of us have been bold enough, have not shown enough courage to do what is necessary. And so I prefer if you just, you know, don't, Martin Luther King says, don't play with God. Don't play with it. Don't play with truth. Don't play with love. Don't play with compassion. If you believe in these principles, do something about it. Have the moral will. Moral will. Moral will. Martin Luther King said, and I believe it, and I choose to believe this, that the universe hinges on moral foundations. Moral meaning holy, godly, righteous, just, compassionate. And it can't be a maybe. It has to be a moral imperative. This is how it is. Moral foundation. So we have to believe in our hearts in compassion and love. That's what it takes to change systems, moral will. Moral will. So Jesus, I think, was right when he came to tell us about poverty, and he said, the poor will always be among you. I don't like that Jesus is right. I don't want him to be wrong. But I think what Jesus was talking about was not physical poverty, because, again, I went to the Philippines, and I learned about happiness. What I've learned here in America is about having. I think Jesus was flipping the script back then because he understood something. That there's lessons to be learned on both sides, when you don't have and when you have. And we have. I think Jesus' lesson was about spiritual poverty. how we go about each and every day, how we see people. I learned that, you know, money is important, but really it isn't. It's how you feel on the inside. Success is not what you get out there, but it's what you get in here. It's fundamentally changed the way I look at life. In fact, I don't want people going out to do social justice work with me if they're not also working on themselves. If they're not going to a meeting or reading a book, if they're not doing some emotional literacy, some emotional self-awareness, I don't want them out there projecting that stuff onto somebody or their stuff onto somebody else. Because I've come to believe as a Unitarian Universalist that really the work is not so much out there, but it's actually in here. That if we want the mess in Washington to go away, we've got to do more inside here. I believe he will just fade gently into that marvelous night because he is reflecting something about ourselves. And that's why I like that 90s rap song, Check Yourself Before You Wreck Yourself. 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 So the core foundation of my ministry now is empowering our faith to empower others to look within, to choose differently, to choose love and compassion, to choose to look at the dream as something we can fundamentally create if we believe enough in sharing and caring and love. You know, the song the choir sang, I Dream a World, is one of my favorite poems by Langston Hughes. When I gave the sermon at the General Assembly in 2012, the choir sang that song so beautifully. The words are powerful. They reflect for me my dream of America and the world. And I keep these words on the wall in my office. And so I want you to hear them again in a different voice, my voice, as I close. And might these words vibrate through your heart and mind and soul and help you to keep on keeping on. I dream a world. I dream a world where humans, no other human will scorn. Where love will bless the earth and peace its paths adorn. I dream a world where all will know sweet freedom's way, where greed no longer saps the soul nor avarice blights our day. A world I dream where black or white, whatever race you be, will share the bounties of the earth and every soul is free. Where wretchedness will hang its head and joy like a pearl attends the needs of all humankind. Of such I dream my world.